Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello, and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. So happy to be here with you on this Wednesday afternoon, maybe a Wednesday evening where you are, maybe even a Thursday morning where you are, if you're on the other side of the dateline. And as I like to say, wherever you are, we're just happy you're here with us. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest for both hours, and it's Ask Me Anything. Anything you want to ask Joe, you are welcome to ask. We love talking about it all. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Joe's the author of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church and Pope Peter and The Eucharist Is Really Jesus and probably a couple books about St. Joseph. I don't know. I can't even keep track. There's so many others. But a prolific author, a wonderful speaker and apologist here at Catholic Answers, and also the proprietor of Shameless Popery, which we'll talk about, his podcast, Shameless Popery, getting more and more popular. But if you've got a question about the faith, you want to know about Jesus, you want to know about the Bible, you want to know about the sacraments, you want to know about the teachings of the church, maybe you got a moral question, you are welcome here. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Joe Heschmeyer, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks. Good to be here.
It's always good to have you. We're having weather, Joe. I don't know if you know this.
Yes.
We're having weather here in Southern California.
It's wild. I mean, I've heard it never rains in Southern California, but when it does, it pours. Now, some would say that is contradictory, but yes, all that's to
pop
say,
music
California
is not, it's not held to a lot, the same logical standards other things are held to.
It's true. It's true. My brothers-in-law stopped. They were driving from the East Coast to California, as one does. They stopped here in Kansas City, and we had glorious upper 70s, lower 80s. And then they made it to California, and it was like mid-90s. Yeah. And I thought, that was what I thought. It was just a maniacal
laugh. You just
thought laugh.
That. Yes. Yeah, it's going to be
don't worry. I shared that with my in-laws. Like, oh, pretty nice out here.
How delightful that other people are suffering and I'm not. And I totally get it. I totally get that feeling. Like, I feel sometimes people hate us because of our weather in Southern California. I feel
that
like,
is not the only reason.
No, I know it's not. It's clearly not the only reason, but it's the reason that I understand. That's
yes,
the one
fair enough.
Well, actually, I understand all the other reasons too. Now that I think about what we represent here in Southern California. 888-318-7884. The number 888-318-7884. It is Ask Me Anything. If you have a question for Joe Heschmeyer, you are welcome to call and ask it. The Pope's overseas, Joe. Were you aware of this longest trip?
Yes, his longest trip of his pontificate. He's in, I believe, Indonesia right now.
Yeah. Poorly, poorly planned. You don't wait until you're 88 to do the longest trip. You do that one when you're 78.
Then maybe it's extremely well planned. It's just taking a very long time.
Oh, I guess so. Maybe that's it. I hope it's all going well, though. It's a wonderful trip. I'm particularly interested in the Indonesia part, but, because it's a big Muslim country.
It's the largest Muslim country in the world.
Yeah.
When you think, like, the largest, like, most populated Muslim country in the world, everybody thinks Middle East, but it's actually Indonesia. And then, meanwhile, East Timor, which is just, you know, right there.
Right next to it.
Is extremely Catholic. And I think fairly recently Catholic, too. I think it's only within the last 100 years it's been evangelized. I want to say The Pillar had a good piece introducing people to East Timor. Some of us remember it from when there was, you know, fighting there. But it's this great little Catholic pocket in a not very Catholic part of the world.
I think East Timor was part of that whole tsunami thing, too. It was like they had all that fighting.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
I think East Timor was. I know Indonesia was, but... Yep. All right. So prayers for the Pope, and also that I think it's very interesting that there seems to be this Islam that is not in conflict with Christianity in Indonesia. I find that interesting. I don't mean that to be pejorative about other people, but I just think that's a wonderful thing, and I hope it can be promoted.
Yeah, I was struck by this. So I've been to, not to Indonesia, but I've been to Singapore and to Hong Kong, and was really struck by the different flavor of kind of the, because you have people of very different religious faiths and backgrounds who are, I mean, almost literally shoulder to shoulder in these very densely populated places, who've just learned to kind of get along. And sometimes it maybe goes to an excess of a sort of a religious indifference, but at the same time, you don't want the, you know, the opposite extreme of people killing each other. So
yeah.
I think it's a good model to kind of see ways of living with one another in a peaceful and affirming kind of way. I knew a couple Indonesian Muslims when I was living in Rome who were very great and gracious and interested in having those conversations about deeper things, about what Catholics believed and what Muslims believed and why. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of good opportunities there. And it is just as, you know, like I said, when people think most populous Muslim country, they're thinking Middle East. It is surprising in some other ways, as you've kind of highlighted, in terms of it's just not meeting people's stereotypes of what Islam is going to look like.
No. All right. The number here is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Your questions welcome. It's Ask Me Anything with Joe Heschmeyer, and lines have begun to fill up. We're half full. We got three of our six lines open now, so you can dial if you'd like to get on and ask Joe a question. Joel is in Ohio, listening on 105.3 FM. Glad you're here, Joel. Go ahead with your question for Joe Heschmeyer.
All right, I'd like to start by saying, Cy, you're awesome. Love all the intros and all the comments. They're great.
Wonderful start. I would just like to say that's a very strong start. I would like to encourage other callers to try an equally strong start. Excellent work, Joel. Go ahead. Take as much time as you want. The show is yours.
One little question for Joe, which is, has he ever heard what he doesn't consider a good question on the air? Because he always says they're good questions.
That's not a very good question.
That's the worst question I ever heard.
I finally got it.
Yeah.
Okay. No, you know, there was
the real question is.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say there's a Twitter account. I don't know if it's even still around. It's called We Rate Dogs, and it rated all the dogs like 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10, 11 out of 10, and so on. And someone was like, do you give anything lower than a 9 out of 10 to these dogs? And they just responded, they're cute dogs. So I just want to respond, they're good questions. Like, this is, it's okay if there's a lot of winners.
There's an interview with Jimmy Page. You know Jimmy Page, the guitarist?
Yeah.
Where the interviewer plays him a guitar solo, and Jimmy Page is like, he goes like, what is that? And he'll be like, that's like a 9 out of 10. And then he does the same thing as the dog person. He just loves guitar solos. So exactly. He doesn't give anybody a bad. I think one of them is his own.
Now, a dog playing guitar asking a theological question, tell me that wouldn't be a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, that's definitely a 10 out of 10. If that happens, I don't know. I don't even know how to finish that sentence. It's such an extreme thought. Joel, will you ask a question now, please? Just ask a question.
You told him to take as much time as you
need. I know, but I'm getting no.
I took the opportunity. Okay, so I had lunch. I always hear on the air. You never, cut off a conversation with someone by like throwing facts and thoughts at them. But I had the opportunity to have lunch with someone. I'm Catholic myself, but I had lunch with someone whose husband is a member of the Satanic Temple. He assured me they don't worship the devil, which is kind of one question. Is that true? But the real question is, he had a real hang-up with evil in the world. How would you take a person like that and start that conversation to say, this is why you should consider?
I think a lot of the problem of evil, we can blame that guy that the temple's named after.
Oh, yeah, right.
A problem with evil, probably the last person you want to be associated with is Satan. That just stands to reason. So, yeah, to the first question, some Satanists, so-called, engage in satanic rituals in a sort of mocking, anti-religious sort of way, not believing Satan literally exists. There are others, and sometimes you'll hear like a Satanist versus Luciferian kind of distinction. There are others who believe there really are occult power, Satan or otherwise, that they're trying to tap into. What is his name? Anton LaVey. And then actually Jack Parsons, who was the head of the Jet Propulsion Lab for the U.S. He was a Satanist of that variety, who was actually trying to engage in like occultic rituals. So those people do exist, but a lot of what we hear about in the news is Satanists are just atheists who are being blasphemous or sometimes are atheists who maybe are hungry for community, as weird as that sounds. And they have a God-shaped hole in their hearts because they don't have membership in the church. And we have a very thin society in terms of civic participation and group membership and anything like this, where people are often quite alone. And church is, for many people, among other things, a place where they form real meaningful relationships with people who have a similar mindset. So I think people who don't share that mindset can often try to find it, even if it is in something like forming a satanic group, despite not literally believing in Satan. So to that, I would say the problem of evil is a real problem. It's a problem for all humans, whether you're religious or not. So in the face of the problem of evil, we can say at the first, you won't want a society where evil is snuffed out at the expense of something like human freedom at the extreme. Like, you could create a society with zero crime, potentially, by having incredibly draconian laws, where there's just like a horrible government crackdown, total police state, and you could get crime to zero. But almost nobody is going to say that trade-off is worth it. Almost all of us regularly, by our free choices, put ourselves in a situation where we are more vulnerable to evil and maybe even more tempted to commit evil because of the tremendous upside. So to give an example, living in a city as opposed to living completely by yourself. Now, for some people, it's not even a possibility, but even a lot of people who could logistically live in isolation don't, because they realize they'd rather live around other human beings, even though that makes them vulnerable to the evil of others, even though it creates new opportunities for them to behave evilly themselves. That risk of evil is worth it for all of the goods that come from interpersonal relationships and all the other reasons we live as social animals. And so my point is, if that's true of us at the individual level, it's not hard to see how this is also true at the cosmological level, that God created a universe with the capacity for evil, not because he wants evil to exist, but because the alternative of a universe in which, depending on how one fought against evil, you could create a universe that you beat evil at such a price that it wouldn't be worth living in. The ideal outcome is one where we are freely choosing God, freely choosing the good, and are glorified in a way that we're not tempted to evil. And that is the Christian vision of what the future holds. But the mere fact we're not there yet, I don't think is a reason to give up on the only solution to that problem.
Joel, as you said, hung up and listened off the phone, just listened on the radio. But while the topic is up, we have a video on YouTube, or you can get it on our website. It's called Satanic Temple for Beginners. It's a conversation with Carlo Broussard that we did 3 years ago, where we took the commandments of the Satanic Temple, and we just examine them from a Christian perspective. I was delighted with what we got, and also the reaction from Satanists, some of whom were mad at us, but a lot of whom were like, wow, I didn't think anyone would ever take us seriously. And that made me very happy that we engaged seriously with here's why these ideas don't work for a Catholic. Without attacking any people. So you can Satanic Temple for Beginners if you're interested in it, Joel. We got to take a break.
And I think even getting those nuances are important, because as they say, the devil's in the details.
I wish I had something.
It's a thing,
I wish
people,
I had some,
it's a thing people
I,
say.
I know. That one, I feel like, oh, I wish I had a comeback. I wish I had known that was coming. I would have thought of a good comeback. But I'll tell you what, let's take a break. And when we come back, I'll have a comeback for Joe's clever use of the devil is in the details right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Hi, this is Father Mike Schmitz. Please join me for Ascension's Bible in a Year and Catechism in a Year here on EWTN Radio. We're going through the entire Bible and the Catechism in 365 days. If you've ever wanted to understand what it means to be Catholic and allow those truths to shape your life, this is for you.
Bible in a Year and Catechism in a Year with Father Mike Schmitz. Tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on EWTN Radio.
I was going to try to come up with something. I came up with nothing. I mean, I just chatted my way through the break, and I came up with nothing. So I guess I've kind of laid an egg, Joe. And a deviled egg. Oh, you saw that coming.
Oh. You got that devil-may-care attitude.
All right, Aiden, you always have to have the last one.
Sorry, it's diabolical, and I shouldn't do that.
888-318-7884 is the number. Ask me anything. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest, but really, I hope this will be a tradition. We're starting with compliments for the host. So, you know, you do whatever you feel comfortable with, but Sydney in South Bend, Indiana, listening on Ave Maria Radio. Welcome back, Sydney. You got a question for Joe?
Yes, I do. Joe, I'm kind of feeling a bit like Johnny One Note here because I'm really fixated on what's happening in Israel. And I don't necessarily see the American Catholic Church paying much attention to it. I have, I listen to your amazing podcast on the Jews, which, and also I've listened to Andrea Villeneuve, who has a similar take, I think, on the Jews. But I'm seeing so many American Catholics that I knew that, you know, used to go off to the Holy Land on pilgrimages, just completely diverting, and now going on, you know, almost luxury pilgrimages within the United States or in Italy or some. And I'm just troubled by this. Like, I'm thinking, like, maybe some of that money that's going to these ought to be sent to Christians in Israel. I just need to know your take. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I gotta say, I really like the way you framed that. So I think what makes the issue difficult is twofold. Number one, there are some Christians who think, well, you know, the state of Israel is the Israel of the Bible, so we have to support it for that reason. And that's not a very good understanding of the biblical sense of Israel. You know, if you look at something like Romans 9, where St. Paul talks about how the true Israelites are those who have the faith of Abraham, which is a faith in the triune God. And that one, it's not, the important thing is not being simply biologically descended from him. But nevertheless, that still leaves open the fact that people shouldn't be in places where they're constantly in fear of their life because of violence. So it's not a simple question of either. Think Israel is, you know, this kind of Zionist concept that isn't very compatible with the New Testament, or oppose the state of Israel in all its manifestations. I think there's plenty of room to support Israel the way you could support Ukraine or any other country that finds itself attacked or invaded. But then the second thing that makes it difficult is that it is a complicated and messy geopolitical situation. That what is a long-term solution to the issue of Israel and Palestine going to look like? I don't know that many people have a very good idea of it. I think we can mourn the situation. But I do imagine that one of the reasons why people aren't more animated about it, maybe at least in part, because of a sort of sense of hopelessness and futility that can very easily set in. And I think we need to actually watch out for that. I don't think that is a helpful attitude to have. But I do think we should have an eye towards what are good things we can support. And so this is why I like the way you framed it. Number one, by the fact that you talked about the connection to pilgrimage. Like, one of the reasons we should care is not just that there are innocent people on both sides of that conflict whose lives are being threatened and destroyed and upended and literally ended, but also because these are places many of us have been personally enriched by. You know, if I've been to, you know, some town and given a talk there, and then find out that there was like a deadly earthquake, that's going to touch me in a way that it won't if it's someplace I've never heard of before. So we have not just a sort of spiritual connection to the Holy Land, but in many cases, these personal connections where, I mean, there are Israelis and Palestinians that I've met that this is very much close to home. So it does make it more, I guess, more real to life in a certain sense, where it's not just something that you're seeing on the news. And then the last thing I liked about the way you framed it is recognizing that one group that is fairly uncomplicated to support are the persecuted Christians in the Holy Land, who often get a pretty bad deal from both their Israeli and Palestinian neighbors. That, you know, for instance, the Christian minorities in the city of Bethlehem, that is a very difficult spot that they're in. They very much need our prayers and our support in whatever way, shape, or form it looks like. And so that is a very, I guess, easy cause to support, where you're just looking at the people who are really coming out on the bottom in many cases in the conflicts like this. So, yeah, I think it's a good reminder. I think, finally, the last thing I'd say, in this age of 24-hour news cycle, one of the strange phenomena that happens is that everything starts to feel outdated shortly after it happens. You know, there can be a political scandal, and 3 weeks later, you don't even remember it. I mean, there was an assassination attempt on a presidential candidate, and that already feels like it was 6 months ago, and it wasn't. And those kind of issues, when you just have conflict in Ukraine, conflict in Yemen, conflict in the Middle East, conflict, you know, parts of Democratic Republic of the Congo, you name it, around the world, and it can just become so overwhelming that I think people tune it out. And that's probably a defense mechanism, but maybe one that's not spiritually healthy in the long run. So we should care. We should pray for people. And I don't know beyond that kind of what we can do as Christians.
Sydney?
Yes, that was really helpful, Joe. And once again, your podcast was amazing. So
I would
recommend that anybody watch it, because it so much clarifies our connection to Judaism. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. No, I appreciate
you saying
that.
Thank you so much.
Sydney, thank you. Okay. That gives me an opportunity to talk a little bit about Joe's podcast. It's Shameless Popery. You can find it at shamelessjoe.com, and you should. Joe, it was a two-parter on a Christian view of Jews, or I can't remember.
It was just one part. I'm blanking right now. Let me look.
Well, the Mormons got two parts.
Right? The Mormons got like five parts.
Okay. All right.
So the title is, What Should Catholics Think About Israel and the Jews? And it's from about 4 months ago.
All right. And check it out at Shameless Joe. What else do you do over there at Shameless Popery, Joe?
Well, my most recent one is, Why Should We Care About the Perpetual Virginity of Mary? And just as a teaser, why do two of the four evangelists make special note of the fact that Jesus's tomb was one no one ever laid in? Like, why does that matter? That seems like kind of an irrelevant detail. Why do they mention that the donkey had never been ridden before? And then why does it matter that Mary's a virgin? And it all gets into this idea of holiness in the biblical sense, which is not just moral goodness. It's about being set apart for God.
Oh, very good. Check it out at shamelessjoe.com. And how many a week are going up now? Two or three?
Two. So there's a short episode usually on Tuesdays, a long episode usually on Thursdays. Sometimes I switch that order. And then we'll have little shorts where it'll just be like a minute or so that Vanessa will pull from other clips.
Hey, if you want to just talk with Joe, call 888-318-7884. We'll get you on the air with him. But do check out Shameless Popery at shamelessjoe.com. Going to Gabe in Texas. Oh, Gabe has called a few times over the course of the last week. Glad to have you back again, Gabe. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
I had a comment first. Yesterday, I really liked Carlos' response, and this is coming from an angry atheist. I liked that the response was very honest. I had to re-listen to it a couple of times because I really liked the response. That's
wonderful.
All right, did you have any feelings about the host, or you just want to talk about Carlo? I'm only kidding, Gabe. I'm glad that you. That's Carlo. One thing you're going to get from Carlo is an answer that's well thought out philosophically, but also is as he always tries to be as generous and respectful as he can. So I'm glad that that was at least somewhat helpful to you, Gabe. Angry atheist, huh? That's how you would categorize yourself?
Yes. You haven't seen my conversations before, but yes, very angry.
All right. But all right.
Maybe, well, maybe this question will be angry.
All right. Well, go ahead with it. So this question right now for Joe is going to be angry?
Yes, because it's the miracle of La Anciana. I wanted to talk about that since
okay.
It was spoken about yesterday.
All right, go ahead, Gabe. Mm-hmm. Let him have it.
Why is the Catholic God okay with ritualistic cannibalism, which is the equivalent of eating meat? And why does the miracle of La Anciana, it only happen once? Isn't it supposed to happen every time you go to church?
Oh, good question. Yeah, no, this is a very good question. In fact, this gets to the heart of the distinction Jesus makes in John 6, verse 63. So in John 6, Jesus presents the Eucharistic teaching and talks about how we need to eat his flesh and drink his blood. And then he says something very strange in verse 63 that sounds almost like he's just negated everything he's just said. Because when he talks about understanding what he's talking about,
this is going to have to be a tease, Joe. No, it's going to have to be a tease.
Oh, okay.
I'm
sorry.
We'll
have to come back.
What is the thing that Jesus said? Hang on. Whether you're a believer or an angry atheist, it's going to be interesting. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. Gabe is on the line, and we're talking about the miracle of La Anciana. Your calls are welcome. 888-318-7884. We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world. But it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to casociety315.com and join today.
From its earliest days, Catholic faith has been lived by a yearly cycle of feasts and seasons. The new book from Mike Aquilina and Adam Lucas, Feasts of Our Fathers, is a one-stop companion for praying and meditating through the holy days and seasons of the church with help from the most ancient Christian people. Don't just read about the early saints, pray with them. Order your copy of Feasts of Our Fathers now at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. It's Ask Me Anything, and you are welcome to call with your question, 888-318-7884. On the line, we have Gabe in Texas, who's an angry atheist. I didn't say it. Gabe said he's an angry atheist, and his question is about the Eucharist. Why does God encourage a ritualistic kind of cannibalism? The miracle of La Anciana, which, by the way, if you don't know what that is, the miracle of actual heart flesh being becoming visible in place of the Eucharistic host, because as a help to the faith of the priest. And this was back in, I think, the 7th or 8th century and still persists now. And so did I get all the questions right, Joe? Do you remember any that I...
Yeah. Gabe, are you still on the line?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. So where we left off before the break, Jesus, in presenting the Eucharist, talks about the need to eat his flesh and drink his blood. But then he says this very strange thing in verse 63 where he says, it is the spirit that gives life, the flesh is of no avail. The words that I've spoken to you are spirit and life. And so if you understood that as saying Jesus's flesh is of no avail, then you just kind of negate everything he said before about how the bread that he gives for the life of the world is his flesh. And then it just completely contradicts the teaching he just gave. Rather, what he's talking about there is that our flesh is of no avail. And what this motif of flesh versus spirit refers to the unaided human understanding as opposed to our response to grace. So, you know, for instance, in Galatians 5, St. Paul is going to distinguish between the works of the flesh and the works of the spirit. Flesh there doesn't mean body, because that includes things like pride that aren't particularly bodily sins. So when we understand what he means by flesh, it means kind of a man-made way of thinking that isn't God's way of thinking. And so, or God's way of acting. So in verse 63, he's telling us don't have that understanding. Augustine, when he's commenting on this, points to the misunderstanding of the Eucharist as cannibalism, as a good example of what it would look like to interpret this according to the flesh and not the spirit. That if you understand at the Eucharist that Jesus is taking some piece of his body and putting chunks of flesh in the host so that he's, you know, tearing himself apart and we are devouring his flesh in a way that destroys him, as would happen with cannibalism, then you're right. I mean, that would be appalling. And this was how the Romans in the early days of Christianity misunderstood what was happening in the Eucharist. And so there's a particularly grisly old Roman account where it claims that Christians take a baby and cover it with grain and then eat its flesh and drink its blood. And it's pretty clearly a confused mix of the manger scene and the Eucharist, the bread and wine, body and blood, all of this. Like, they've got a confused misunderstanding of what's going on in this very cannibalistic sort of way. That's not what's happening, because in cannibalism, you're killing and devouring and destroying. In the Eucharist, you're communing at this deep bodily level with Jesus. This is different in kind from ritual cannibalism, which then leads to your second question, which is, what makes Lanciano special? Why don't we see that every time? Lanciano, the Eucharist becomes visibly flesh there. But one of the things that follows from that is that you're not going to then consume the Eucharist there, because now it's not just the substance of bread and wine, but the accidents as well. And this is to be a visible miracle, in that case, to help the faith of the priest. If you go the cathedral in Orvieto, Italy, about an hour and a half north of Rome, has this whole side chapel that is just filled with depictions of other Eucharistic miracles. So this has happened several times in history, where there will be a visible transformation of the host into body or blood. And then you just preserve this miraculous body or blood. And you don't consume the Eucharist in that case. Something else is going on. So I hope that makes sense, because we're not believing that the Eucharist transforms in the body and blood of Christ in the same way that you would find in a Eucharistic miracle. And if we did think that's what was happening, we wouldn't be receiving it, because then it would be something more like cannibalism, where you're just devouring and destroying flesh.
Gabe, what do you think?
Well, it's a lot to absorb right now. I would need to listen to the clip again.
All right.
But is there any way, if you drop me, could you at least have me talk to Edgar again? Because he was supposed to send me an email so I could talk to Tim Staples.
Oh, yeah. I will. Just hang on the line. Edgar says he will pick up. Gabe, I'm glad we're having these conversations. You have very interesting questions, and you're awfully honest with us too. And
I appreciate your humility too, Gabe. I really do. I should have said that before. Even though you're self-proclaimed angry in your atheism, you seemed perfectly reasonable. These were legitimate questions and good objections, and the answers do exist.
And maybe if we talk again, you can rate who did better, Joe or Carlo. All right. Moving on, though. Hang on. And we'll. No, Joe, nothing? You give me nothing for that. You, no. He's still giving me he's just giving me the evil stare. He's just giving me the evil stare. All right, Thomas, the TikTok engine is here. What Thomas does, Thomas does a lot of social media work, and he goes to TikTok, but other, what do you call them? Outlets? No.
Platforms.
Platforms. And shares these questions that he gets from TikTok and the answers that the apologists give. Welcome, Thomas, the TikTok engine.
Hi, Si. I sure would like to interact with more atheists like Gabe on that platform.
Oh, you would? You'd like to? All right. So if you're an atheist, Thomas is saying, come interact with the Catholic Answers. It's the Catholic
give
Answers account,
the worst
right?
you got. That's be, what he's saying. The be angrier, chill. The better.
Be chill and normal on that.
Oh, because most of the atheists you deal with are
a lot angrier and a lot less humble than Gabe.
I think it's probably
Gabe.
Fair to really? Say most people on the internet are not as normal.
Yeah.
I know this is controversial to say this. I don't think the internet brings out the best in us. I know that I'm going out on a limb there, but I don't think it brings out the best in people.
I think I've got 5 or so years of professional experience that would back you up completely on
the
that.
The only thing on the internet that I think is truly does bring out the best is the guy that rates dogs, and the lowest score he gives is 9. Yeah.
9.
Yeah.
Gosh, he does violence to statistics, but fine, whatever.
That's no, but God hasn't made any dogs less than a 9.
Okay, we'll leave it there. I don't want to derail this because I could name a few.
I heard someone say the only time they got rated a 9 was in Germany.
9? Because the word 9 means no,
just no
in Germany. Okay.
Anyway.
Thomas, the TikTok engine, go ahead with your question for Joe, punster.
Let's move on from that quickly. Joe, the person who commented under our video, they said, wasn't papal infallibility a 19th century invention? If so, can you really backdate it 2,000 years?
No, it's not a 19th century invention. This is when it's dogmatically defined. Part of the reason it's dogmatically defined is to give a sense of the scope of infallibility, because there were some Catholics who their understanding of when the Pope was infallible was actually too broad. So this was a lively debate amongst Catholics for a very long time. But you can see evidence of a belief in something like papal infallibility quite early on. So, for instance, the first document that tells us the four Gospels are Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John is against heresies in about the year 180 by St. Irenaeus of Lyon. And in that document, the same work that we hear who the four Gospels are, he talks about apostolic succession, and he traces the lineage of every pope from Peter and Paul down to his own day. He's got the 13th pope as the Bishop of Rome at the time. But he tells us why. This is in Against Heresies, Book 3, Chapter 3. And he says that he's going to trace, even though he could do this for any of the churches founded by apostles, it's, again, only the year 180. It's not that hard to know that pretty recent history. The reason he traces the lineage of Rome rather than even his own diocese of Lyon or Smyrna, this ancient city where he grew up, he traces Rome because he says it is a matter of necessity that every church should agree with this church on account of its preeminent authority. Now, there's a couple ways you could understand that. One, you could say, well, maybe he's just saying Rome happened to get things right, so we should all have the same faith Rome has because it just happens to get things right. But he doesn't say that. He says because of its preeminent authority. A second way you can misunderstand it is to say, well, that means we have to follow Rome even if Rome's teaching heresy and error. And he's literally got a book called Against Heresies. That's where this is from. He's clearly not okay with heresy. So that leaves the third possibility, that he's convinced, for whatever reason, that the Church of Rome will never teach heresy, and that's why we can safely agree with it, and that's why it has this preeminent authority. So that is, in embryonic form, a pretty clear presentation of something like papal infallibility. But it does take the centuries to nuance what does that mean and what does that not mean.
Great. Thanks, Joe. I don't think St. Irenaeus was anywhere near the 19th century, was he?
No, I didn't want to correct the persons for saying 2,000 years before, because that'd be before the time of Christ, but I wasn't going to do that.
Splitting hairs. Yeah. Thanks, Joe.
I like how you guys slipped it in, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, like, apathetically.
I don't want to mention.
One thing I definitely wouldn't say is, I think your math is off.
All right, we got to take a quick break. Thomas, thanks. It's always nice to see you here. All right, we'll be right back with more Ask Me Anything with Joe Heschmeyer right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
EWTN offers the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass from Our Lady of the Angels Chapel, live every morning at 8 Eastern. We want to help you draw closer to our Eucharistic King. Our free Mass Guide booklet will help you follow along with the Mass on EWTN and unite with Catholics worldwide. For a free Mass booklet or ebook, visit EWTN.com/Catholicism, then click on Readings.
Back to Catholic Answers Live. Lines have been staying quite full. Lots of folks on the lines. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. Check him out a couple times a week. New podcasts from him at Shameless Popery, because Joe is a shameless papist. And you can find his podcast and all the information about it at shamelessjoe.com. Shamelessjoe.com. I'll tell you what, before I go back to the phones, which I will do directly, I do want to mention that Joe's book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, is a super popular book, and you can get it for $10 right now over at shop.catholic.com. Shop.catholic.com, just $10. And if you're in the United States, even in the weird states that aren't connected to the other ones, I shouldn't have said weird. That was rude. But in, you know, the states that they're out doing their own thing, we'll send it to you for free. Free shipping in the United States.
I just announce how confusing I find it that we can send things to Alaska but not Ottawa?
No, I know. It's like you've got to fly over it to get it there. And it probably is on a train that passes through Canada.
Right.
But, I don't know how the world works, Joe. I don't know if I've made that clear to you before. I'm really not sure how any of this works. Go to shop.catholic.com. $10 will get you Joe's book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Really dig into those first 200 years of Christianity and see what it was like to be one of those primordial Christians. I always, especially because I know a lot of people say, I just want to be a Christian like the Christians who knew Jesus were. Well, check out Joe's book and you can be that, because there's historical records on what they were like.
Yeah.
And what they did.
It turns out our mental image of them often doesn't match the historic records of them.
No, they are not hippies, in case that's what you thought they were. They're not hippies.
I mean, other groups that are like that, Vikings didn't have horns on their helmets. The pilgrims didn't have those weird buckles.
Oh, you're rocking my world right now. You are rocking my world
right now. I'm just saying, a lot of our stereotypes of different people of the past are grossly inaccurate. Those are often harmless errors, but when it comes to the faith of the early Christians, if we have an idea that they were hippies or free church Protestants or whatever, I think we're going to be very surprised when we read their writings and find out that could scarcely be further from the truth.
Get it for $10. The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. On the line, Aaron in Hastings, Michigan, watching on YouTube. Welcome back, Aaron. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Hi, Joe. It's actually your book, Pope Peter, that got me back.
Oh, glory.
My question is, people like me, or double-mindedness, how do we get out of that mindset?
Well, tell me a little more. What does double-mindedness look like in your life?
Like, for me, I actually go from the Catholic Church to the State of the Contest to Protestantism back.
You're doing the whole like Christian denominational kind of roulette. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say this. You're called to be a sheep in the flock of God. And the temptation we have in the modern age, especially in the West, is to try to self-shepherd. And it's easier to do that now than ever before. People have advanced degrees. They're smart. They've got access to the world's knowledge at their fingertips, at their computers. And they want to solve every problem on their own. And then once they've solved it, they want to maybe affiliate with a group of people who agree with them. And then it turns out, oh, they didn't agree with me personally. And, you know, I actually disagree with them over here, and I disagree with those ones over there. And so then they go off and find another flock. And at the end of the day, the problem with that is who's really the shepherd? You become your own shepherd. You are shepherding yourself. And so, by all means, we should be curious about the truth, and we should be eagerly devouring of the truth. But Jesus didn't intend for the church to look like what you've just described. And the problem that both Protestants and Sede Vacantists fall into is that it quickly turns into that. And Sede Vacantism, I've seen it play out in that exact same denominational sort of way that Protestantism does, where you might start off at a group that recognizes but resists the Pope, and then you say, though he's actually not the Pope, and then it starts to be like, well, do we recognize any of the sacraments, or do we think that there's been a conclave and somebody else is the Pope? And it just shatters into all of these little bits. And Jesus instead says, as he says in John 10, that he comes so there will be one flock with one shepherd. And at the outset, it looks like the shepherd is him, right? He's the good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. But in John 10, 1 to 10, he actually describes himself as the sheep gate and says that the true shepherd will arrive by the gate and that he is the gate. So what he says there is that he will call someone and entrust the entire flock to them. That's what it means for the shepherd to enter by Christ the gate, the true shepherd. And we see him do that later in the Gospel of John. In John 21, he says to Peter three times, do you love me more than these? Do you love me? Do you love me? And after Peter affirms that three times, each time Jesus says, feed my sheep, attend my lambs, feed my lambs. And so he is entrusting the entire flock to Peter. Why? Because otherwise we're going to fall into the very problem that you found yourself in. So I would say, before you try to hammer out all of the theological questions that I'm sure you have, before you try to solve all of those questions on your own, ask a more fundamental question of, is that what God has called you to do? Did he call you to be theologian in chief? Did he call you to sort out all of the theological problems in the church? Or did he call you to be a member of the flock of Christ as a lamb following the shepherd, both Christ, the good shepherd, and the earthly shepherds that he's placed over you?
Aaron, does that help you?
Oh, yes, tremendously. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah,
God bless you, brother.
My pleasure.
We're glad that you call, Aaron. Thank you. I'm going to go to Massachusetts now. Peter's in Massachusetts watching on YouTube. Peter, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Joe Heschmeyer.
Hi. I don't know. Is it all right if I change my question because it was also on the Pope, but you sort of just answered it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
all right.
That's
all right. Let's go with Plan B, Peter. Go ahead.
Okay, Plan B. So I'm a Gen Z Catholic, and kind of rare, like, to find people community, but I often find that among more religious Catholics, we're often, like, discouraged from contemplation, and I really like the idea of contemplation. I think it should be more accessible and more people should try it out, and so I was wondering, like, what your thoughts on that and how available contemplation is for lay people.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I like your second question, then. It's solid. I would say this, that this is another area where I think the modern world works against us. There is a conspiracy against silence. I've heard it described that way. A conspiracy against having any time to contemplate and meditate and to actually see beyond the world of products and material gratification to the world of actual meaning and final purpose. And that those two things can often be really in tension. And I often, when I'm speaking to groups, we'll ask people, if it's a small enough group that we can kind of share, like what some of their goals and aspirations are. Like, what's something you really care about and are striving for? And, you know, it can be anything from wanting to succeed at their job to wanting to be able to save up for a vacation to wanting to grow in holiness with God. And then we contrast that with the modern world with this sort of 30 minutes or less or it's free mentality of instant gratification. And so I always ask, like, well, how many of your goals can you realistically achieve in an instant gratification sort of way? And the answer is always none of them, of course. Because if you could get your goals instantly gratified, they wouldn't be your goals. So we live in this world, and this is true of believers and non-believers alike. We live in this world where the things we value most in life are not the things that the culture provides at the level of instant gratification. And it doesn't mean those things are always evil and bad. But it does mean that if we're not careful, they can get in the way of the things we actually care about, that actually matter, the things that actually point to our purpose and destiny and our reason for existing in this world. And so I think the analog to that is there's something beautiful about the non-productivity of contemplative prayer. And many people don't think they have it in them, when the reality is they just need to detox from all the devices, all the distractions, all the diversions, and they will quickly discover that there are these depths within them that they probably don't even know about. And they need to, and it may take, honestly, in my own experience, as someone who can be way too attached to my phone, who can be way too attached to devices, when I go on a silent retreat, it's often not until day two that I actually can have the real conversation with God, because so much of day one is just detox. It's just being cleansed of the electronic addictions and all of those things. And so when you plug that into something like Mass, this conspiracy against silence is such that as Americans, we historically, this is not new. As Americans, there's this whole strange history of these like religious orders of contemplative nuns that would come over to the U.S. and then the bishops would put them to work in the schools and totally destroy the nature of what they were called to do, to spend time in prayer before God, because we wanted productivity. And I hear this even in homilies, where you'll hear homilies on Mary and Martha, and it's so clear from the homily on Mary and Martha, from the biblical text, that Jesus is saying Mary has chosen the better part. But I couldn't tell you the number of times I've heard fellow Catholics try to defend Martha as playing this really important role, because we want to do and act and operate, and we're addicted to that. And so the idea that we might just stop and converse with God without an agenda, without something we're trying to achieve or accomplish, but just to spend time with the one that we love, it runs counter to something deep within us that we need to eradicate. So to your question about the role of the laity for that, I would say this is very much the calling. Everyone should be a contemplative. Everyone. This is not something for contemplative orders alone. This is not something just for the priest. This is something for all of us, because contemplative prayer, in the words of St. Teresa of Avila, quoted in 2709 of the Catechism, is nothing else than a close sharing between friends. And if you don't have that, right, like if you have a friendship with someone you never talk to, that's a weak friendship. If you go your week without really talking to your wife, things are not healthy. And so the idea that we would go a week or even more than a day without having just a conversation and friendship with God points to a lack of depth in our relationship with God that needs to be remedied.
Peter, I'm anxious to hear what you think.
I agree completely. You couldn't have said it any better, because I've been very, I think, annoyed because I've heard from like fellow Christians or priests, like, oh yeah, contemplation, it's so high, you have to be a saint already to do it. But I know my own failures and ignorance. Like, I started contemplating in high school because my brother taught me, and my brother learned it from some hermit guy. So, like, I've always felt like exactly what you said, that you need to have a personal relationship with God, and you need to be able to talk to God honestly. And I'm also, like, very thankful you're able to give that answer, because if someone like me, who's, like, I'm a college student now, I was a high school student when I started, if I can do it, someone who's like, oh, knows a bunch of technology and studies a bunch of things, if I can find time, then certainly, like, a grown adult can, or a middle-aged person who, you know, it doesn't know how to use technology as well, right? Like, I'm very connected. Now, maybe not as connected as some other people, but I think it's very accessible, and I completely agree, and I think it's very important. And there is a reason it's the highest form of prayer. It's very valuable, it's very personal, and it's very cathartic and relieving for discerning things.
Yeah, and I would actually say this to those who are busy. Paragraph 2710 of the Catechism addresses that head on. It says one does not undertake contemplative prayer only when one has the time. One makes time for the Lord with the firm determination not to give up, no matter what trials and dryness one may encounter. One cannot always meditate, but one can always enter into inner prayer, independently of the conditions of health, work, or emotional state. The heart is the place of this quest and encounter, in poverty and in faith. So that's what I would suggest. And no matter how busy you are, You can start talking to God right now. This is during this commercial break. Do it. That's a great time.
Praise God. Peter, what a beautiful call. I'm so glad we went to Plan B. I really enjoyed that conversation that you and Joe had on that. And there are lots and lots of resources to help people pray as well. I mean, this is something that, you know, just type in Teach Me to Pray. I think there's a Jesuit that started a Teach Me to Pray. There's a bunch of them, resources on prayer. We have some at Catholic Answers. But what a beautiful way to end an hour, Peter. Thank you very much. Hang on. We'll give you one of Joe's books. If there's one that you don't have already, we'll get it to you. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. Ask Me Anything on Catholic Answers Live. We'll continue right after this.